This is your full Ways and Means Committee for the state of Oregon, the people that make a lot of the early budget decisions that the rest of the body will be approving, hopefully within the next 3 months. You have the opportunity, like a few other communities, to review the co-chair's initial recommendations, hopefully in many cases make some modifications of those by giving good testimony here today. We'll be doing things basically broken up into three different agendas. The first will be a brief presentation of what the co-chair's budget does and does not do. And then the second will be the ground rules for the hearing to make sure we get as many people to testify as possible. Really appreciate the turnout here. It's been wonderful. And then lastly, of course, the hearing itself, where we get to listen to you. And we will not be asking questions. We just want to hear as many of you as possible. I'll set the stage here with the co-chair's budget. I think it'll be on the screen if everything works correctly. And you, of course, I think have handouts to look at just to give you a context for why we did what we did and why we didn't do what we didn't do. As you know, the budget is based on revenues that we assume coming in for the next 2 years. We budget on a two-year basis. And our budget, what we're trying to do, given the fact we just come out of the worst recession in Oregon's history, is build strategic investments for sustained prosperity. We're trying to see if we can't marry key investments, knowing we can't do everything, with a manageable, sustainable budget. The pie charts that you see, the first one gives you the context for how much money totally the state of Oregon has. There's three big categories we talk about. That's federal money, fees, and then your tax dollars, which we call general fund. And federal money, we can't do a whole lot about because the federal government tells us how we're going to spend that. And the fees, of course, go for dedicated programs. The general fund, which is about $15 billion, that pie chart is the one this group here has the most flexibility based on what they think you want to move around. And as you can see from this pie chart, bulk of the money goes into education, about 55%. The next highest percentage is 23% for human services and about 16% for our public safety judicial branches. So about 97% of the money, or 93% of the money, excuse me, is going to what we think, at least, are your top priorities. And the big issue is, well, within those big priorities, Senator, here's what I'd like to do, here's what I'd not like to do. The other thing we're very proud of in this budget is, because of this worst recession that we've had, is we're trying to save some money. We're not going to spend every dime we have. There are tremendous needs out there, tremendous needs. But at the same time, we want to make sure that when the next recession occurs, which could be, frankly, any year now, we're prepared. So we set aside the highest ending balance that we've seen in the last decade. We make sure we put money in the rainy day fund or education stability fund. Hopefully at the end of these 2 years, barring some horrible economic disaster, we'll have almost $1 billion saved up so that we don't have to cut schools, human services, or our public safety budget as much as we did 6 years ago. This budget balances. The bar graph shows that not only have we taken into account the immediate needs, but we're actually sustainable for the next two biennia. Why is that important, Senator? I want my stuff done now. Well, the answer is we want to make sure we're not cutting services 2 years from now. We want to make sure that, given hopefully a reasonable economy, we can maintain the services that we promise in this next two-year period. There's been a lot said about, well, gee, Senator, you should be able to do everything. You got a 20% increase to your budget. Wish we had that in my household budget. Gosh, I should be able to do everything. Well, if you look at this next bar graph, you can see why we can't do everything. 6 years ago, when the recession hit, we cut $1.5 billion in public services. And not all that is waste, fraud, and abuse. Some of it, unfortunately, was services we'd rather not have cut. This school here would rather have had a sustainable budget that wasn't flat-funded for 6 years. And you can see that that blue line that goes across the screen, that straight line, that's where we were 6 years ago. Only now, is our per capita general fund, lottery fund revenues coming into where we can do what we were doing 6 years ago. So we've really struggled in this budget to finally add back. So when we want to do all these wonderful things, there are some innovative investments in this package, it constrains what we can do. The governor thought we were going to have more money. There's a lot of reference to the governor's budget. Well, the governor's budget's irrelevant. His budget was based on money we don't have. We don't have $200 million that the governor assumed in his budget. So it's very difficult for us. We are the ones, with your help, that have to make tough decisions about, okay, geez, then if you don't have that much money, I can't do all the things that the governor talked about. You have to help us prioritize or reprioritize what you see in the co-chair's budget. And that's the problem we face. This is not an easy committee to serve on. We did make some big investments. The first big investment we made was in K-12. As I said, it had been basically flat funded from 1999 through 2003, a little bit of money in last session. But we're making a substantial investment. We're putting 18%, an 18% increase in our K-12 budget, trying to get our kids off to a great start. We put $260 million of it in an achievement fund. We're actually tracking performance now. You should be able to go online or talk to your school district 2 years from now and find out exactly how your graduation rates, your third grade scores, that sort of thing is improving. The other thing that we've heard a lot about as we've gone around the state is that, geez, college is too unaffordable. Tuition hikes are killing us. Well, this legislature stepped up and has now passed a bill in the Senate that's going over to the House called the Shared Responsibility Model, where we reward any individual, actually every individual in the state of Oregon that wants to work a little bit, you know, minimum wage job during the summer and maybe part-time during the academic year, 10, 15 hours a week, we'll guarantee you that you will get access to an Oregon university or community college. You will get access. And at the end of the day, if you're going to a community college, you will graduate with no debt or almost no debt. And if you're going to a four-year public university, hopefully no debt larger than $13,000. That's a huge difference from what our kids are facing right now. We have stepped up and recognized access is key. The other thing we've done, based on our long history with this body, is you've got all these great programs for seniors and mental health, alcohol and drug treatment, only to have people lapse back into treatment programs. It's very expensive. We destroy people's lives again and again. So we've stepped up and put a housing initiative out there. We're going to make the first big investment in the housing that we've had in this state, and again, in the 15 years, 10 years I've been in the legislature, in the last 15 years, in the body. We're going to put $100 million on the table here, something to consider to invest in. Believe it or not, we are trying to talk about prevention. We can't do a lot of stuff at the back end, except for prisons. Unfortunately, Measure 11 makes sure we build prisons. So we've tried to emphasize Head Start. We've tried to emphasize K-12, and that makes it tougher to do community colleges and higher ed. We're hoping we get these kids off to a good start, that they'll be able to work through the tougher institutions where we can't put as much money into. Same thing in our human services budget. We have a healthy kids plan. We do early mental health for children, but it makes it tougher for us to take care of those adults that also need our help. We're putting our money on the kids. We also try and work with our county partners. We understand at the legislature that it's not all about state government. A lot of our county partners and local nonprofits supply the services. We just give the money to them. One of the big problems our counties had was when the federal government took away the Secure Rural Schools money. There's work right now by our federal delegation to get that back, but it's still not going to be coming this year. So we've stepped up. We're going to protect the schools. It's in our formula. We're going to set aside matching money for transportation grants so the road structure, infrastructure doesn't fall apart in rural Oregon, and a few other things you can see in your packet. This next slide is a bar graph, and much has been said about cuts. There are no cuts really in this budget by program area. There's only one program that gets severely cut within all these program areas. If you look at the far left-hand side, that light blue bar, that's what we gave 2 years ago, 05-07. That's the budget cycle we're in right now. You can see the real dark, I think it's a purple bar, on the far right-hand side. That's what the co-chairs recommend. We recommend increases in every single budget area. Every single budget area. Well, except administration. Bob Jensen, who's chairing that committee, won't let me increase administration. I guess that's a good thing. I appreciate his solid work there. But we've done a good job in trying to emphasize the things you want. Some people look at that and say, oh, look, gosh, Senator Schrader, you're just giving it all to education. What's that about? The next slide shows you as a percentage increase. K-12, yeah, 18%, that's pretty darn significant. But look at human services. That's a higher percentage increase compared to 2 years ago. Economic development, almost 50%, over 50%. Natural resources, 27%. So we tried to balance this out in terms of absolute dollars and percentage increases to try and get to the services you want us to do. last two slides talk about capital construction. There's a lot's been said about how much can we afford to do in terms of building things in the state of Oregon. And the point I guess I'd make here to all of you is that for every dollar we put into a building, i.e. the debt service to pay for that building for the next 20 or 30 years, that's a dollar less for a professor, a child care worker, or a state trooper. So we have to balance that. Co-chair's budget for capital construction, that small box on the far right-hand side, is the third biggest capital construction budget in Oregon's history. It's not as big as 2 years ago or 6 years before that. But we can't afford, can't sustain that type of construction of 2 years ago and 6 years before that. The last graph shows you that even with that little box of capital construction, our debt service continues to increase almost exponentially because of previously approved construction projects. So we've got a big job trying to balance our construction and operational needs. The last few slides, the one shows the breakout by program area. Each of my subcommittee chairs, Representative Noel and I, have given them a certain amount of money to spend, and here tonight we're going to listen to how you would spend money within those program areas. We do have certain principles and that we're operating from. You can see those, read those at your leisure. And then the last slide summarizes the major investments and initiatives. And then there's a slide that tells you how to get more information. So with that, we're going to start into our process. It gives you a little context. We're going to be calling four people at a time up. We'll have four people on deck. There's a set of four chairs up here, so if you're in the back and I call on deck, you can meander down here and sit in these four chairs so you come right to the table. The quicker this operation goes, and hopefully not everyone's going to get a chance to speak. We got a lot of great turnout here, but hopefully many will get to speak. People will get to speak for 2 minutes. 2 minutes. So please be concise. Representative Nolan has the unfortunate duty of flashing cards at you to tell you when you're getting close. At 30 seconds, she'll hold up a yellow card. And when you're done, she'll hold up a red card, and Senator Schrader here will have to cut you off. And I'm not doing it to be mean. I just want to make sure the next person gets a chance to be heard. I want to make sure that special thanks to Joanne Verger and Arnie Roblin for encouraging us and letting us come down to their fine community. I really do appreciate it very, very much. They told me there'd be a good turnout. I didn't think it was going to be this way. We'll probably go to about 3:30 or so. A lot of people have other commitments, so many of us are going to be leaving, unfortunately, right away. There's a lot of people signed up. I'm going to try and jump around a little bit to make sure we cover lots of different program areas as we go through this. And I've consulted with my co-chair and with Arnie and Joanne to see if we can't maybe hit pretty much everything y'all want us to listen to as we come up here. All right, well, let's get going. We're going to start with first page and not jump around just a little bit here. Let's have Judith Hansen come up, Stephanie Schoonmaker. Let's have Sharon Comden and Jeff McCowan come up. And then on deck, we'll have Roger Gould, David Kronsteiner. Kronsteiner, pardon me. Ken Graber and Tonya Schoonmaker then. Please start up.
Good afternoon. My colleague to my right is Stephen Schoonmaker. His daughter is Stephanie. Just when he greets you, then you'll know.
Could you bring the mic really close?
I will. Is this better?
Perfect.
Okay. Good afternoon and welcome, Chairs Schrader and Nolan, and Joint Ways and Means Committee members. I'm Judith Hansen, Southwestern Oregon Community College President. Today, I request your reconsideration of the co-chair's budget recommendation that includes totals for community colleges significantly less than the $529 million minimum required for continued student access to education and training for our rapidly changing Oregon workforce needs. We build our Oregon workforce student by student. I have the great privilege every fall of helping our students move into our residence halls at Southwestern Oregon Community College. One of the most memorable students this last fall was Jack, not his real name, who arrived with his five step foster brothers and sisters and his foster mother. He came to Southwestern to go to the Oregon Coast Culinary Institute. When he turned 18, he not only graduated from high school, but he graduated from the social services system. And so he arrived at Southwestern with all his belongings, his new bicycle, his pots and pans, as well as his clothing and the linens required for him to live on campus. I was concerned for Jack because he was a skinny guy with a ruddy complexion and didn't speak at all. His mother said for him that he had hoped to be a chef since he was a little boy. I shouldn't have been concerned. By December, he was sharing with me at a guest reception what a great fall he had had and how well he was doing and how exciting it had been to learn how to become a chef. And you know, by June, he will have finished his studies. He'll be at an externship. And after 2 years, we'll be returning taxpayer dollars to our taxpayers of Oregon that helped him go to college.
Thank you very much. Great testimony. Great testimony.
To finish.
Well, one sentence, please.
We just finished our budget at Southwestern. It was based on the co-chair's revenues. It was without the economic development that you see here on the South Coast. No programs for the port.
If you're going to, a lot of people aren't going to get a chance to testify. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, good afternoon. I'm Dr. Stephen Schoonmaker, Vice President of Instruction and Student Services at Southwestern Oregon Community College. And senators and representatives, welcome to our community. I support the $529 million funding request by CCWD. This level of state funding gives us a real chance to prepare a sustainable workforce on the southern Oregon coast. While the South Coast is a great place to live, it is a challenge to educate such a sparse and dispersed population. At the same time, more is required of educators than ever before. The amount of new technical information doubles every 18 months. The top 10 in-demand jobs for 2010 didn't exist in 2004. We are asked to prepare students for jobs that don't yet exist, requiring technologies not yet invented to solve problems society doesn't even know are problems yet. What we do know is our communities will need many more skilled workers in the next decade. We need to continue, expand, and create programs in areas like allied health, construction, manufacturing, systems process operations, fire science, hospitality and tourism, transportation, alternative energy, and horticulture. We must be allowed to sustain and expand our workforce training efforts today to meet business and industry demands tomorrow. This requires more state fiscal support than currently proposed by your committee, and 2 years from now is too late. Community colleges should not be treated as a modern-day Oliver Twist, required to hold out our hands and ask for more. You say you support educating Oregonians. $529 million is a reasonable and realistic investment in community colleges for Oregon's educational future. It is a win-win. It fortifies eroding educational infrastructures. It strengthens local communities. And it creates a multiplier effect for the state. It stimulates the economy. It increases tax revenues. It restores pathways for an educated, skilled workforce for Oregon. It's the right thing to do. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeff McEwen, the mayor in Coos Bay. I want to welcome you to our community. We're very proud of our community. We're working very hard to help ourselves. We're lucky to have Arnie Roblin and Joanne Verger as part of our team to help us. But we need your help. We need help with infrastructure. Senate Bill 21 is coming. That will bring money to help our dredging for our community, which is so important for our economic engine, which is our port. I also want to add my support for our community colleges. They are an important part of our economic engine as well. We have to do our part, but again, we need your help to help us do our part. Our circuit court judges also need to be paid adequately. I believe that we are 51st or 50th in pay in the country of what we pay our circuit court judges. The reality of that is we cannot attract quality people if we continue to not pay them well. So we need to take care of our judges. Again, we will do our part to help our community. We will do our part to drive our economy so that we can help with our taxes. But we need your help. Our community has a number of children in the area that go to our schools. Our schools, unfortunately, about 60% of our kids, maybe 65% of our kids qualify for a free lunch program. That does not speak well for our economy. So we need to take responsibility, and we need you to help take responsibility for our economy. Again, we're very grateful that you take your time to come and visit these rural communities. It means a lot to us, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good afternoon. My name is Sharon Comden, and I'm a CASA. I am here because of the steady erosion of funding for services that are essential to maintaining a civil and productive society: education, the judiciary, public health, and social services. The old saw, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, could never be more true than today, with our courts, correction systems, and social services consuming ever more budget dollars. It's our fault. You know, these kids didn't design our system. We did. Here's how it happens. To reduce the number of children in foster care, the Department of Human Services recently adopted new rules that permit children who are exposed to known safety threats to remain in the home if they are judged not vulnerable during the CPS assessment. Most children 12 years old and older will not be considered vulnerable. Some of you might remember the Ashley Pond, Miranda Gaddis sexual abuse and murder cases. Those girls were 12 years old. Do you really believe a sixth grader is not a vulnerable child? Another DHS cost-cutting measure keeps children in meth homes for as long as possible. In the past, a child was presumed to be endangered if their parents used or manufactured meth. Now the rules require that a physician document severe harm to a child exposed to meth manufacturing and/or use before DHS can remove the child from the home. How do you document an infant's severe harm? I guess we have to wait until the kids have observable symptoms, wait until their brains are fried, then we can spend more money trying to reverse the damage. We should be learning from our mistakes, not making them into law. The cost to the children who are forced to remain in these unsafe homes, insecure, uncared for, and at risk for sexual and physical abuse can't be measured. The cost to society is obvious. The cycle will perpetuate itself, and taxpayers will foot the bill for law enforcement, the courts, revolving doors, social services. We have kids who have been taken out of the homes and replaced back into those toxic homes 5 and 6 times and more. And correctional facilities, because the system didn't get those kids into permanent, loving homes. Result, more generations of impoverished and damaged families committing more crime and having more babies. Kids need safe...
We have to finish up, Sharon. I'm sorry? We have to finish up.
Can I finish my last...
Last sentence.
Okay. Yes, CASAs like myself are volunteer watchdogs trying to assure that children from troubled families have a chance to grow up healthy and productive despite the misguided laws like the ones I described today. Please support CASA funding.
Very good job. Up here, Roger, David, Ken, and Tonya. Then on deck, we'll have Holly Egan, David Bridgham, Jeff Bishop, and Steve Grief, I believe. And if you want to applause, it can sometimes delay the next person speaking. If just do the silent applause thing, that would be great, moving your hands. That way we can keep going a little bit faster. Just again, some more of y'all can come on down and testify. Yeah, no, my co-chair, Decay, that also lets us know how many people support the people that are speaking. So feel free to do that liberally tonight. Yes, sir. Please go right ahead.
Yes, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and rest of the members of the committee, we thank you for being here in North Bend and Coos Bay. Showing your support of us is something, as Mayor McEwen said, we deeply appreciate. I am an attorney here in the community, have been since 1972. I'm also currently a member of the Coos Bay City Council. and was at one time mayor of the city of Coos Bay. In fact, my term, a couple terms of mayor, was just before Senator Verger had 8 very successful years as mayor of Coos Bay. And so I'm very familiar with Senator Verger's good works and also Representative Arnie Roblin's. I'm here to support Coos County's judges in specifically, and in general, ask that you, as the Ways and Means Committee, in your difficult job of allocating limited resources, recognize the value that our judges provide for this state. That's something that we don't do very often, and that is recognize the value of our circuit judges. We have 3 judges with us here from our district this afternoon, and I'd like them to stand. Judge Richard Barron, Judge Michael Gillespie, and Judge Paula Bechtel. And could we give them a hand, a real hand? That's something we don't do very often, is give a hand to the judges that do the hard work in the trenches that we ask them to do. We ask them to solve problems for us at the very basic level, drug problems, crime problems, juvenile delinquency problems, domestic relations problems, and yet we don't show them the value that they afford our state by paying them 50th out of 51 on the totem pole of priority that the nation shows judges. Our judges in this state are 50th out of 51 in payment for salary. And so I urge you to amend your current plan and add something to this specific area for our circuit judges. One last point, let me also ask you to support the Smart Moves program that the Boys and Girls Clubs of this state provide. Department of Human Resources Director Dr. Goldberg is very supportive of what we do. I'm a member of the board of directors of our Boys and Girls Club as well. Boys and Girls Clubs are very effective in administering service.
Identify yourself for the record, too, Mr. Gold.
Roger Gould.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Hi, I'm Tanya Schoonmaker, Director of the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, RSVP. Our mission is to engage people 55 and older in volunteer service in order to meet crucial community needs and provide high-quality experience that will enrich the lives of our volunteers. We recruit, screen, place, train, ensure, support, and honor senior volunteers. Personalized service allows us to meet the needs of our volunteers while fulfilling critical needs across the county. It's a win-win. We have become known as Coos County's go-to place for securing volunteers. We work in collaboration with more than 100 organizations to accomplish goals and expand their services. Unfortunately, budget cuts are creating a strain on our ability to effectively run our program while trying to meet the increased demand for our volunteer services. Furthermore, the fact that our county has one of the highest concentrations of elderly in the state represents both a resource for encouraging senior volunteers and a service need. RSVP focuses on program initiatives of assisting elderly residents with the goal of helping them maintain independence in their own homes. Healthcare is very important to our current residents and the area's ability to draw retirees and new business. Last year, RSVP volunteers provided almost 20,000 hours of support in delivering health services. We are working to ensure children find success in reading and other skills through mentoring at the Boys and Girls Club. The list is endless. I won't bore you with all the facts, but quite simply, we strengthen the community of building capacity of nonprofit and public service programs. We are extremely grateful for the past support that we've received from the state of Oregon, and we hope you agree we are an investment worthy of increased funding because it certainly pays off.
Nice job. Chair Schrader, Chair Nolan, members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Ken Graber. I'm a resident of Glasgow, Oregon, an active member of the communities of North Bend and Coos Bay, a father, an educator, and a member of Stanford Children. I would like to thank you for coming here today, giving us something of great value. I would like to thank you for coming here and giving us your time. Time is a scarce and valuable commodity in our society, and by giving us your time, you are placing value in what we have to say, and you are placing value in this community. If you were to ask me as an educator what I need to be an effective teacher, my answer wouldn't be money. It wouldn't be better facilities. It wouldn't be more prestige or respect for the occupation. Although these are essential and require our attention, for me, as a teacher in the classroom, my answer would be more time, quality time to make real connections with my students. Good parenting and good teaching are not that different. Ask any parent, and they will say that in order to have a strong child, both physically and emotionally, it takes quality time. You can't buy it. You can't wish for it. You must invest your time with the child. I have many colleagues whose classes are filled with eager young minds wanting and needing to be heard, wanting and needing to be understood, wanting and needing to have time invested in them. Yet large class sizes makes this investment nearly impossible. For this community of North Bend and Coos Bay, a budget of $6.3 billion would translate into the ability to add 25 new educators. 25 new educators who could help class sizes go from manageable to optimal. Class sizes where students once again feel that time is being invested in them. I would like to thank you for your leadership role that you have taken in addressing these concerns and encourage you as you continue to find ways to invest in our future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good testimony. All right. Let's get, I'm going to keep this all straight here. Holly, David, Jeff, and Steve up. And on deck, we're going to have Chris Fleming, Kat McCown, Don Mann, and Carolyn Thompson, please. Please proceed.
Senators and representatives from the Joint Ways and Means Committee, thank you for being here. My name is David Bridgham. I'm a board member of Southwestern Oregon Community College. From my own perspective, community college has become a hostage to the political process. It becomes clear to me that this budget is about a deeper, more thoughtful conversation with your colleagues about revenue increases. I'm not here today to judge the merits of that tactic, but there are consequences. As we debate an inadequate budget, students in my district are trying to make important decisions that will shape the rest of their lives. I also have deep concerns about remarks recently in the Oregonian. I have our latest summer-fall schedule with me here, and I've searched it for brain surgery 101, and I haven't found it. I also searched for basket weaving. These two classes are reported by one of the co-chairs synonymous with community colleges these days. We do have classes that lead to pathways for a medical career. And on the second count, basket weaving, I'm disappointed we don't. It's been the community college mission in the past to foster community classes for lifelong learning, to be a beacon of culture and support the arts, heritage, and humanities. It is, of course, until the last two bienniums ago when the legislature stopped funding classes that didn't lead directly to a career. Unlike our neighbors to the north and the south of us, Oregon does not support these kinds of classes. This is part of the hole that the 2001-03 mandated funding cuts created that still exist today. Communities or comments in the paper on offering small classes of 15 students at a community college and its relationship to kindergarten classes strikes me as off the mark. Offering a 15-student class that is needed to complete a degree or to ensure placement in a four-year university to a student in rural Oregon is absolutely essential. I'm not going to tell kids on the South Coast that just because they live here, they don't deserve the dream of becoming an engineer or a doctor. That advanced calculus classes with 15 students will make at Southwestern. Thank you for your support.
Good testimony. Yes, ma'am.
All right. I'm Holly Egan, and I'm the student body president at Southwestern Oregon. For a 17- or 18-year-old senior, investing in college is a big deal. Quite literally, it's an investment in the rest of their lives. An education is an education no matter where it is obtained. If putting oneself in debt years after college by attending a big university is the path one chooses to follow, they will get the same as at the community college, where the tuition and fees are a lot less expensive. This was something I looked at when I was choosing where I was going to get my education. I'm originally from Idaho, where they don't supply their communities with community colleges, where tuition and fees are a lot less expensive. This is also the case for many of the students that I attend Southwestern with. Many of us are headed down different educational paths, where we will in return give back to the community in more ways than one. By coming to Coos Bay, I've really grown to love it here, as have many of my peers. I know that someday I may want to return here and raise my family, which in return will bring money back to the state. There are many students that stay in Oregon after attending Southwestern because they've seen what Oregon has to offer them. I know that if the state doesn't increase funding for community college, students statewide will be faced with higher tuition burdens, which in return may make them have to go to school elsewhere where they can afford it. If the state wants to keep its students here and gain interest of the states coming, of the students coming in from other states, then it would be in the best interest for the state of Oregon to take the first step and invest in the students by providing the $529 million funding level for community colleges across the state.
Good job.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeffrey Bishop. I am the executive director of the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay and a resident of Coos Bay. The Oregon economy receives a great deal of its strength via international trade. Many of our key employers are supported not only by trade originating in Oregon, but also a myriad of other places. The conveyance of this trade most often selected by business is via containerized shipment. For the last several years, containerized shipping has grown dramatically all over the world as trade barriers have relaxed. The West Coast of the United States has also experienced radical increases in containerized shipping, realizing double-digit annual growth since the beginning of this new century. This growth has created serious congestion in major U.S. ports, which in the past years has affected the ability of many businesses in meeting the needs of their customers and ultimately depriving and/or costing American consumers. The port industry projects that even with modest and conservative growth by 2015 to 2020, there will be a severe shortage of container terminal capacity in the United States in the order of millions and millions of containers. Accordingly, terminal operators, railroads, and shipping lines are working to identify new locations to handle this surge in trade. China today is building massive export terminals with the majority of this trade targeted for the United States. This cargo will be handled, if not in the United States, then in Mexico and or Canada. Today, the state of Oregon has an opportunity to capture a segment of this growth with an investment in base infrastructure like the Coos Bay Shipping Channel. Hopefully, later this year, your committee will have an opportunity to consider this opportunity via your deliberations on Senate Bill 21. I encourage you to consider these growth possibilities in conjunction with the risk protections inherent in Senator Berger's bill. In closing, let me thank you for your time and effort on behalf of Oregonians to seek out our thoughts and concerns regarding Oregon's future. I also wanted to let you know that even though we as an organization are focused on our project, we are not unconcerned with the plight of our partners in building a better community. To that end, we encourage you to fund all levels of education so that if we are successful in recruiting family wage jobs, there are qualified Oregonians to take advantage of these opportunities.
Thank you.
I thank you.
Good job. Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Steve Greif. I'm a teacher here at North Bend High School, and I want to welcome you to our stage. We have a lot of students here in the audience from North Bend, and we want you to know that this community is very, very supportive of education, and anything that this committee can do to stretch more dollars to education at all levels, Head Start, public schools, through high school, and community college would be supremely supported by this community. We took two busloads of students to Salem on President's Day. They gave up their day to come to lobby you, and I know that our representatives met with them and were very appreciative of that, and we're so certainly appreciative of you being here today. I'm a Southwest Oregon Community College alumnus who has come back and lived in this community. I love it here, and I love what I do. But I've seen over the last 6 years a severe erosion of what goes on in education because of the lack of funding. And I'm certainly appreciative of the fact that you're putting monies back in. We've lost some great elective programs here, and it just disheartens me. But what really is getting to me now is the class size issue that Ken brought up earlier. I literally have U.S. history classes of 39 students in one room. It's really hard for me to connect. Students know I'm working hard, but it's hard to teach to the masses. I'd much rather teach to a few at a time. And even though I have 30 years' experience, I don't know that I could do this job if I was 22 and starting over again with the load and with what I've been asked to do. Schools are the most important thing in our communities. And if you could make one difference in your budget, it would be to increase it so that we could get more teachers and reduce class size. The other thing I want to mention is the new teacher mentoring program. My experience is that it was very helpful for me to have an older teacher helping me when I started. And I was a mentor about 15 years ago when there was such a program. The loss, I think about one-third of new teachers don't return within 5 years. And apparently this program in other states is having a retention rate of 50 to 90%. So I hope you can support reintroduction of the new teacher mentor program.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. All right. Let's get our next group up. It'll be Chris, Caddy, Don, and Carolyn. Then on deck we'll have Ken Kennedy, Keith, Timbull, Eileen Opus, and Connie Gray. Please proceed.
My name is Carolyn Thompson. I've lived in this area since I was a small child. I am currently the board chair for North Bend School District. For the past decade, this area has experienced declining enrollment and economic downturn. This combination has severely impacted the district's ability to offer a comprehensive educational program as well as maintain classroom sizes that common sense tells us will foster excellence in education for our students. The district currently has class sizes of over 30 in some elementary classrooms and nearing 40 in some high school classrooms. We operate with less than full-time counselors, librarians, and custodial time has been reduced across the district, so classrooms are not cleaned on a daily basis. Instructional assistants, secretarial, and technology assistants have also been greatly reduced across the K-12 program. Support services for staff in the classrooms are minimal. In order to balance budgets, the district has eliminated a science physical education specialist. We've cut back on home ec, building trades, business classes, music, and dance classes offered. We've eliminated swimming programs and physical education classes. We've even had to close school to balance the budget. The proposed legislative budget results in a reduction of slightly over $250,000 in our district budget. The additional money allocated in Senate Bill 318 will add $450,000 to our district's funds, resulting in an addition of $200,000. The intention is to use this money to fund three teaching positions, when in actuality, nine are needed to bring our K-12 classrooms to an average size of 25. No increases. It can be made in the area of support services. I would urge the legislature to find school funds to fund schools at a level of $6 billion and allocate the preliminary amount of $300 million in additional funds to the school districts, allowing us to spend them as we see appropriate within our districts and for our communities that we know so well. We've been hit hard here, and we need your help.
Thank you. Yes.
Good afternoon. Senator Schrader, Representative Morgan, welcome. Community members are very excited to have you here today. I am Caddy McEwen. I'm wearing actually three hats today. First as a community member, and that's foremost. Second as a school board member of prior years, and as a port commissioner. I'd like to start out with a very, very brief history of what our community, where we have come from over the years. In the 1860s, we had a very robust shipbuilding business here. Our community has transitioned many times through that endeavor to forest products for many, many decades. We've had a very robust coal mining industry here at the turn of the century for about 40 years. We shipped a lot of coal to California. We've shipped a lot of wood products all over the world, and we're very proud of our heritage. In fact, personally, I have a grandfather that came here in 1920 to build a box factory. He sent cedar orange crates down to the orange growers in California. My husband's family came here in the 1860s to start a new life. They actually hailed from Bandon, Ireland. I have a grandmother that came from Sweden in 1910. Her father was a carpenter, and they decided to start a new life in America. And I have a great uncle that came here from Scotland in 1915 to work in the coal mines. Actually was killed in a coal mining accident in 1921. So I have a very long history here. And the history of the industrial base of our community is very rich. My husband and I were very proud to grow up here in the 50s and 60s. And during that time, life was very good. The mill whistles were blowing every 8 hours. Things were moving along nicely. When I became a school board member in 1989, the landscape changed. We now have between 50 and 75 of our students on free and reduced lunch. I went through the difficult task of closing seven elementary schools. We have an opportunity now, with my Port Commission hat on, to bring back the robust economic base that we had in our community over the last 100 years. And I'd like to urge you, with all earnestness, to please very seriously consider supporting Senate Bill 21. That $60 million investment in our community will come back to you many, many, many times. The 5,000 jobs that are purported to be created.
We'll have to finish up, Ms. McEwen. I'm sorry.
45% will be in Coos County, 55% out of the county, and you will receive in excess of $21 million per year in revenue once this is fully built, so your investment will come back to you many times. I thank you so much for your time and very much appreciate you taking the time to come to Coos Bay.
Thank you.
I wish to add my thanks to the co-chairs and the committee for coming down to Coos Bay and Coos County to share these hearings. My name is Chris Flamang. I'm a resident of Coos County, and I'm a member of one of our citizen review boards. I would like to speak to you in support of funding for the Oregon Judicial Department, which of course is the third branch of government and the one that articulates our Constitution. The Chief Justice has recommended a budget of $359 million. The Governor's budget suggests $328 million. The co-chairs have proposed an amount of $304 million. This funding is $6.5 million less than current services demand. Our Oregon judges are among the lowest paid in the nation, which we've heard of before today, which hampers the ability to encourage and retain the best legal minds on our bench. An increase to an annual salary of $125,000 for a trial judge is needed, and an additional 13 judges should be brought into the Oregon Judicial Department to help handle increased complexity of caseloads. Increased funding will upgrade core technology, which at the current time is 1980. There is an ongoing issue for upgrading local court security. For the Citizen Review Board, caseloads are larger and more complex, and we need to add an additional 62 staff. The cost of the Oregon Judicial Department funding is less than 1% of the state's budget. I would like to also point out that the co-chair's proposed budget will reduce the efficacy of the department to where it will be taken akin to a crude and smoky petroleum product that is incapable of supplying light or energy. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Don Mann. I'm General Manager of the Port of Newport, Lincoln County. Thank you, Senator Schrader and Representative Nolan, for being here today and the rest of the committee. It's an honor to be here today. The governor's budget includes a policy option package of $100 million in lottery funding for recapitalization of some critical infrastructure programs. Two programs not being considered for recapitalization are the regional rural investment programs and the Port Revolving Loan Fund. These infrastructure programs have been highly successful in improving the overall economic well-being and quality of life for Oregonians, particularly in rural communities. More specifically, in the Benton, Lynn, Lane, and Lincoln counties for the years 2003-05, $790,000 in regional rural investment dollars leveraged an additional $27 million in federal and private funds, creating over 770 jobs, an average wage of $12 an hour. Another $2.3 million in federal funds and private money has been leveraged in 05-07 from the regional rural investment programs, creating 213 more jobs. Specifically in Newport, Lincoln County, the Port Revolving Loan Fund assisted the Oregon Brewing Company, better known as Rogue Ales, to relocate from their 800-square-foot brewery on the Newport Bayfront to an 8,000-square-foot area in the Port's Marina complex in South Beach. Today, Rogue Nation World Headquarters occupies over 38,000 square feet of space in this facility, with another 11,000 square feet in the warehouse and cold storage now under construction. This initial 150,000 square foot investment meant a lot to our community and to the region. I would be remiss today if I did not ask for your serious consideration for the passage of Senate Bill 21 that would allow the International Port of Coos Bay the opportunity to expand their infrastructure base and capture a valuable opportunity to engage in the movement of ocean-going container traffic. The port has strongly urges you and your committee to eliminate and reduce the funding opportunities so that Oregon make, or please don't eliminate or reduce, and continue to improve livability and stimulate job creation for Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. All right, let's get our next group up here. Ken, Keith, Eileen, and Connie. And then we'll have on deck Carl Seminster, Greg Stone, Nikki Witte, and Lieutenant Steve Smart. Start right up, please.
Good afternoon. Welcome, honorable members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee of our great state of Oregon. My name is Ken Kennedy. I'm an active volunteer in the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, RSVP. I'm currently vice chairman of RSVP Advisory Council for Coos County, and I sit on several other boards for local RSVP organizations. RSVP has approximately 600 volunteer members working in 100-plus organizations or stations in Coos County. I have included a list of those stations, and at the end of my remarks, I would like to have you pass them out to if you would allow that. When I retired, I did not want to sit idle and watch TV, so I got involved in RSVP. I guess I felt like I wanted to give something back to the community. I know several of our volunteers that are active because they've lost a spouse, but after a few months of grieving their loss, rather than sit around to do nothing, they become active RSVP volunteers. They also look forward to giving something back to our community, and it gives them a way to feel needed and something to look forward to. As an RSVP board member, one thing that has been obvious to us is that some of our members who are living on fixed incomes rely on our current meager mileage subsidy of 12 cents per mile if they have 100 miles a month and if they request the reimbursement. I don't have to tell you folks that $3 a gallon plus how much $12 a month will buy in gas. RSVP would be at a real loss without those folks, and we would love to be able to increase the mileage subsidy to at least what the IRS pays, which I believe currently is about three times as much. But our budget just won't stand the load. Statewide, RSVP volunteers have saved millions of dollars in man-hour costs to businesses and organizations in the last year, $2 million here in Coos County alone. We are asking that you consider increasing the RSVP budget to help cover today's increased costs, and we very much look forward to your continued support in the future. I thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. I am Eileen Opus, and I work for CCD Business Development Corporation. We are the fiscal agent for the Coos Cree Douglas Regional Board. I apologize in advance that you may not be able to understand me so well this afternoon. I had oral surgery a day ago. I have a retainer, and I sound like I have plums in my mouth, but it will be a little bit of entertainment. I understand that your meetings around the state have been packed with advocates for or against issues other than the community and economic development programs that are so vital to our region. However, this afternoon I hear a lot of people talking about economic development at this meeting. I wish to address the increase for the regional investment program that Governor Kulongoski included in his budget, the recapitalization of the community infrastructure funds, and the millions for cluster workforce training. The regional investment program has suffered severe cuts in the 7 years that I have been working with it. It is a great program and provides the only flexible funds for the rural distressed areas. We have worked in partnership with the Special Public Works Funds and the Workforce Investment Board to fund infrastructure projects. We were encouraged to work together by the last legislature. We have many great projects. Examples are the International Port of Coos Bay Railspur project, which enabled Southport Lumber to locate out on the North Spit with rail service and 82 jobs. The Railway Bridge Rehabilitation Project led to the retention of jobs for Roseburg Forest Products in Coquille and Georgia Pacific in Coos Bay. A total of 300 jobs were retained. The Bolin Island American Bridge dock rebuild. I'll come back to some other projects because I'm afraid I'll get caught off. These are just, the infrastructure finance package and increasing the regional investment fund is particularly important to this region. It's difficult to think of many job development projects that are not connected to some kind of infrastructure improvement. Southport Lumber and Hardin Optical come to mind. There are currently three big projects in Douglas County that are dependent on regional investment funds to fill the gaps and to move the projects forward. They have not been funded yet. These projects will create approximately 300 jobs. The regional investment fund and infrastructure are crucial. Please, we encourage you to include it in your budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen.
Welcome to the South Coast. I'm Connie Croy, and I'm the Area Agency on Aging Director for Coos and Curry Counties. That means our program has the Older Americans Act program and the Oregon Project Independence Program, hereafter referred to OPI. I'm here to speak on behalf of the frail, vulnerable, but valuable seniors of Coos and Curry Counties. I would like for you to reconsider your funding choices that you've made on the Oregon Project Independence Program. It is not enough just to use the property tax referral program that was funded in the last legislative session. This program needs your assistance. We provide care to seniors in their home at an average over the state of cost of $338 per client versus the higher cost of other services. Where the clients like to be is their home. I would like for you to consider that you restore the general fund funding to the Oregon Project Independence Program of $12 million. Support the governor's proposed increase to OPI by $4 million. Last year, they also enacted a bill that we need to help start serving disabled in the age bracket from 19 to 59 so that they can also remain in their own homes. It is very important that you reconsider this funding. I know there are vulnerable and other programs that are at risk also, but these seniors cannot speak for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie.
Good afternoon. My name is Keith Timchuk. I'm the mayor of Reedsport. I'm a commissioner for the Port of Umpqua, and I have the great honor of being the co-convener or co-chair for the governor's Oregon Solutions process to bring the wave power project to Reedsport. It is an honor made all the more enjoyable by the fact that my co-convener is State Senator Joanne Verger, and it's always a pleasure to work with Joanne. I am here to testify in support of two funding packages before the Oregon legislature, both related to wave power development. The first is for the Oregon Innovation Council and funding for their process. The wave power proposal that I am currently working on was one of 7 of 24 that survived rigorous evaluation last year by the Oregon Innovation Council. Wave power investment in Oregon offers huge economic payoff potential, and the Ocean Power Technologies project in Reedsport demonstrates that the competitive advantage that Oregon currently has in this field. The legislature has tasked the Oregon Innovation Council with identifying emerging industries within the state that are most deserving of state investment because they offer the highest potential payoff to Oregon's economy. Wave power is indeed a project of that sort. Not only do we have the Reedsport project online, but already Finnvera Renewables, a $100 million a year company, has brought its wave headquarters to Portland. Denmark made a similar public commitment to wind power 10 years ago. It now is a $20 billion business in Denmark. Wind power, 95% of that is traded outside the borders of Denmark. Oregon has the chance to be the Denmark of wave power. I also want to encourage you to support the Oregon Solutions process. It is an amazing process which identifies projects which need state support. It's $1.5 million. That's it. It's tied to the Hatfield Center at Portland State University. It helped bring the airport expansion to Coos Bay. It's helping bring wave power to the Reedsport area. It is deserving of your support. Thank you. And thank you for allowing me to run over my time, too.
That's right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. All right, let's get Carl and Greg, Nikki and Steve up. On deck we'll have Mary Fields, Wally Robbins, Casper Sharples, and Joanne Hansen.
Hi, I'm Carl Simoneau, one of the two volunteers of the Coos County Clean Air Coalition, which is through the Health Department. We are funded through the state, and we are the tobacco prevention and education program called TPEP. The problem we have is tobacco prevention is the single most preventable cause of death and disease in Oregon. Each day, the tobacco industry spends over $445 million marketing their products, and 20 of our kids get hooked on tobacco, one-third of whom will die of a smoke-related illness. The solution we have, the tools and knowledge to prevent these deaths, approaching tobacco prevention from many angles. Where people live, work, and play is effective. Since many factors influence a person's decision to use tobacco, we must tackle tobacco use from several different directions at once. The Centers for Disease Control states that Oregon should be spending a minimum of $42 million per biennium to address the serious public health threat. We are only spending a fraction of that amount. Therefore, cigarette consumption declines have been cut in half since funding for Oregon's program was cut in half in 2003. Tobacco prevention yields a 30-to-1 return on investment in future health care costs and lives saved. It would be penny wise and pound foolish to not invest in Oregon's future this way. If just 10% of the revenue from the increase in tobacco tax is dedicated to helping fight tobacco use, it will prevent 29,400 kids from becoming smokers, saving 9,400 of these kids from premature smoking caused death. The additional resources invested in prevention.
I think your time's up, Carl. I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Greg Stone. I'm a consulting forester. I'm a partner at Stuntzner Engineering and Forestry. We're a resource-based consulting firm. I'm here with two hats on today. I'm president of the Oregon Small Woodland Association for Coos and Curry Counties. I'm also on the board of directors of the Coos Watershed Association. My message is about economic development through wise and sustained use of our natural resources. Number one, on behalf of the Small Woodland Association, we need an extension forester here in Coos and Curry Counties. We've been without one for 5 years. That puts an added burden on the Department of Forestry for their service foresters. Not all of the people want to hire a consultant, so they need an alternative. Number two, on behalf of the Coos Watershed Association, lottery funds, 65% of the grants given are earmarked for capital improvements. 35% of the money is supposed to go to council support. The Coos Watershed doesn't get anywhere near 35% of the overhead cost, but we've been very successful in leveraging 2 and 3 times the amount of our money by being able to get extra money. So we need more of that 35%. And in that regard, we can help the economic development the way we have been, echoing Commissioner McEwen's comments about what we've had here in the past. It's not all gone. We've got lots of trees, and we can have lots of trees in the future. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, I'm Nikki Whitty, a Coos County Commissioner, and I, too, want to say thank you for coming. I had prepared packets for you. I don't know if your staff is passing them out, but I had so many things to support that I wanted to do each one in a letter form. And the first one is Senate Bill 21 and the Oregon Gateway Project. The letter explains why all three commissioners have strong support for that bill. I also want to support the Oregon Solutions Project and the Solutions Team. I, too, was a co-convener on a project that was successful, and I think it's one of the best programs the state of Oregon has. I also want to support the budget for the Senate Bill 82 Land Use Task Force. There's a support letter for the Regional Investment Program and support for the $100 million recapitalization of the community infrastructure funds. And counties don't benefit directly from those funds very often, but our partners, the cities, the ports, and the special districts really, really need that money. And also, next Friday afternoon, we have another legislative delegation coming down, and some of you may be with that group, to talk to us about county-state shared services and who pays and how much does it cost and maybe who should do it and who shouldn't anymore. So I've shared with you a document that we've begun to prepare. It isn't finished, that highlights what we believe are the county-state shared services and different ideas that might help us continue to do those services, or maybe we make the decision and the state really is the best place. So we're really looking forward to that conversation. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Look forward to that, too.
Good afternoon. I'm Lieutenant Steve Smart, the station commander of the Coos Bay Patrol Office. The Coos Bay office is tasked with patrolling 242 road miles in Coos and Western Douglas counties. Currently, the Coos Bay office consists of 7 road troopers covering this patrol area 7 days a week, 20 hours a day. On any shift, I'm lucky to have 2 on. In the late 70s, we had 18 road troops working out of the Coos Bay Patrol office. At that time, Gardner, near the junction of U.S. 101 and 38, had a full-service office that included supervisors, 5 troopers, and game troopers. Currently, we have 2 game troopers working out of that work site. In 1998, the Coos Bay office was able to put a resident troop in Reedsport solely to work 38 because we were having such a problem with traffic there. For 5 years, from 98 to 03, we averaged less than 1 fatal crash on that stretch of highway. In 2003, I was forced to lay off 10 of the 12 road troopers in the Coos Bay office. The resident troop was one of those positions. In the next 10 months, we had 5 fatal crashes on that stretch of highway. Members of the committee, as a police officer in Coos County, I've been 17 years, 14 down here. I've had subjects attempt to shoot me, run over me with vehicles, stab me. I've been punched, kicked, slapped, kicked, bit, and worse. My family, my kids, even my dog's been threatened. I mention this only because, in my experience, all of those occurrences pale in comparison to the stress of notifying a family member that one of their children or husbands or wives have been killed in a traffic crash. Every time I notify a loved one that one of their family members has been killed, I hope it'll be the last time, but I know it won't. At this time, with the numbers we have locally, we are forced to react to incidents that have already occurred. My hope is that we can increase our numbers so that we can proactively seek out and apprehend hazardous drivers before they inflict the financial and emotional impact on families and society as a whole. Members of the committee, it's my honor to serve the Coos County and Western Douglas County and the state of Oregon as a whole, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Excellent testimony, officer. Mary, Wally, Casper, and Joanne up, and then on deck we'll have Christina, Alexander, Holly Stamper, Jennifer Gum, and Larry Rapp, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Fields, and I am the director of the Southwest Oregon University Center, which partners with Southwestern Oregon Community College, representing the Oregon University System down on the south coast of Oregon. Your colleagues and predecessors 7 years ago had the courage to open this center in order to serve the higher education needs of the South Coast residents. I'm pleased to say that in the last 5 years, we have graduated 150 baccalaureate, master's, and 2 doctoral students along the South Coast. Those folks remain here. They build our economy. They are the professionals in our situations, building our new businesses, looking forward to new types of careers that are going to emerge here on the South Coast. In order to do so, you need to remember where they come from. We've got students that may or may not have a tradition of higher education in their background. They're new to the system. They're overwhelmed by the expected expense required in order to gain this higher education, which they understand is the key to long-term prosperity in this region. As we look at the history with the legislature, I think for the past several biennia, the state of Oregon has disinvested in higher education and passed more and more costs on to those students. I think the shared responsibility model is an interesting plan. It will work for many students. it won't work for many here on the South Coast. Those on the South Coast are career changers, full-time mothers, caretakers of elderly family members, working as hard as they can. They often give up their minimum wage jobs in order to attend higher education. Distance education and site-based programs are the primary means by which these folks have graduated. So please reconsider your higher education budget to include additional opportunities for folks that may or may not be able to take part of the shared responsibility program. Thank you.
Very good. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Wally Robbins, and I live in North Bend. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here before you this afternoon. I'm a retired longshoreman. After having worked on the waterfront for 48 years, during that time, I also served as president of the ILWU Local 12 for 15 years. At one time in this port, we had 450 longshoremen working and making a family wage job in the Port of Coos Bay. Now we have less than 60 longshoremen in this port. You can see the decline that's happened over the years. And many of those who are working in the Port of Coos Bay today have to travel a long distance in order to make a living. And one of those is my wife, who is a registered longshoreman and also travels to make that type of a living. There's no doubt that we have seen a decline in the cargo moving through the terminals in the Port of Coos Bay. And we've seen the conversion of Coos Bay and North Bend waterfronts from industrial operations to developments that promote and support tourism, recreation, and retail business. That's fine. But we also need to have industry-based jobs, because at one time there were more than 5,000 industrial workers in the Port of Coos Bay. And those 5,000 jobs were generating cargo that went through the port. I fell behind here, I'm sorry. The Oregon International Port of Coos Bay has been working diligently with community partners to revitalize maritime commerce. And now the port is talking with a company that believes that Coos Bay has what it takes to be in an intermodal container port. But we need a deeper and wider navigation channel in the lower bay to move modern container ships. In that end, we support Senator Verger's Senate Bill 21, and that's what I'm mainly here for today, is to ask for your support in that venture. Thank you.
Thank you, Wally. Yes, sir.
My name is Casper Sharpless. I'm a retired guidance director and counselor at Marshfield High School. I'm an Oregon Student Assistance Commission commissioner and an Aspire advisor at Marshfield High School. I'm speaking on behalf of the Aspire program submitted by Representative Roblin, House Bill 2729. The Aspire program recruits and trains adult volunteers to work with high school students in all aspects of planning and implementing their post-high school educational goals. Aspire students receive needed individual attention, which is especially important for first-generation students who may have no experience with such processes. This attention is effective. One measure of its effectiveness is that high schools that have Aspire have shown a much greater increase in students applying for scholarships since 1998 than those high schools who do not have Aspire. Aspire has experienced exceptional growth since its inception in 1999. In 1999-01, there were about 170 advisors assisting over 600 students. During 2005-07, there are about 1,400 advisors providing individual assistance to over 6,000 students. In addition, over 25,000 students have received assistance through group and or drop-in services because of collaborative efforts with Aspire and school staff. Over 80 high schools currently participate in the Aspire program. In 2005-06, this service was provided for $22.59 per student. The governor's budget proposes about $1,300,000 for Aspire, which would allow up to 150 high schools to apply for matching grants to have Aspire in their schools. This projected cost for this would be only $16.46 per student. Aspire is in jeopardy. It is currently funded through grants, mostly from foundations. Those grants will wane in the near future. Aspire needs stable funding if it is to continue to exist. Aspire is a program that students and schools have demonstrated that they want and need. I urge you to fund it at the governor's proposed amount. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, Senator Verger and Representative Roblin, and all the members of the Budget Committee. Thank you so much today for the opportunity to speak. I'll be very brief in the interest of time. I want you to know that I support the lottery. However, I have to admit the payback has been minimal for me. However, economic development and a sustainable workforce will be created by passage of Senate Bill 21. Family wage jobs are directly responsible for protection of home equities, first-time home purchases, and affordable rents in this area. The business community will be stabilized, and this community will again prosper. The state will be supported, the counties will be supported, the cities and city services will be supported, and the schools will be supported. If you give to us, we'll give back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Very good. Joanne Hanson.
Joanne Hanson.
All right, let's have Christina, Holly, Jennifer, and Larry come up. Then on deck, we'll have Ned Beeman, John Sauvier Souter, Pat O'Connor, and Billy Joseph. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Christina Alexander, and I'm an associate professor of sociology and anthropology at Southwestern Oregon Community College. And I'm here probably rather obviously in support of the $590 million community college funding. I represent, I think, a voice from the trenches in a sense. You've heard others here today from other levels of, in our educational system. And I want to explain to you a little bit, and I'm sure you're aware of these differences between community colleges and four-year universities, but I think people tend to forget really how different we are. And a lot of that difference comes from the people that we serve, from the students that we see. In some academic years, close to 80% of our students are first-generation college students. That's truly an amazing feat, I think, both for the students and for us to perform. We don't have teaching assistants. We have a few professional advisors and counselors, very few. Most of us carry advising loads as well as pretty heavy teaching loads. And through all of this, and serve on committees and all those other things that, that faculty do everywhere. But I think that one of the greatest things that community colleges provide for students is a personal connection with classified staff, with administration, and with faculty. We truly are mentors for our students. We care. We spend an enormous amount of extra time with them. We get to know them quite intimately in many ways. Many of us have had to intervene in situations of domestic violence or intervene in sense of guiding people in the direction to go. I should clarify that. So I think that that in that sense, we, the other thing to point out is that people may never go to any other college after a community college. Of course, our goal and our hope is that everyone will go on and get a four-year degree or a graduate degree. But the reality is that we're it for a lot of people. And so the buck kind of stops with us, and we are already stretched to the limits. So I hope you will reconsider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Holly Stamper, and I'm here to encourage you to have some healthy skepticism on Senate Bill 21. I know what the sales pitch is, and I'm sure you do too, but there are a couple of facts I'd like to point out to you. First of which, this is to be found on the California Energy Commission website. It is a PowerPoint presentation copyrighted by Jordan Cove Energy, and it lists the size of the ships to be used in Coos Bay. These would be liquefied natural gas tankers. They are 210,000 cubic meters. Those particular ships have a draft of 12 meters. And also, I'd like to submit the Port of Coos Bay's, from their own website, the channel depth, which is 11.28 meters. So there's no way the proposed LNG project can, the ships can even come in without the dredging. And I know we're being told that the Senate Bill 21 has nothing to do with LNG, but I would like to submit this for your consideration and let you make up your own mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to welcome the senators and representatives to Coos Bay. I'd like to thank you for allowing all of us here in our community to take part in your recommended budget this year. I am a longshoreman with the International Longshoremen's Warehousemen's Union, Local 12. I've been a longshoreman for 21 years in the port of Coos Bay. I've been here when it's been very, very busy, and I've been here when there's literally no work for the longshore members. I'd like to say that more than half of our local travel to Portland, Longview, and Vancouver to sustain work. At some point in the future, I would like to be able to work again in the Port of Coos Bay. And I believe that Senate Bill 21 will do this for our Bay Area. I'd like to also say that in your co-chair process, the principle that caught my eye, it says emphasize investments that promote self-sufficiency and community vitality. That's Senate Bill 21 for the Greater Bay Area here. I'd also like to mention that the Oregon Gateway is a proposed multi-berth intermodal container terminal intended to capture a share of the growing North American Asian trade for Coos Bay. A container port here for Coos Bay. That's awesome. I'd also like to say that the intermodal terminal could create up to 1,100 jobs here, not just for longshoremen, but for other trade unions, for other working families in this community, with a payroll of $52 million for the state of Oregon at startup and rising up to 4,500 jobs, with an annual payroll of up to $210 million at optimal peak. The tax revenue, which is always catches people's ear, flowing to the state of Oregon from payrolls and related sources would likely to begin about $5.2 million and rise to more than $21 million. I'd also like to say that, to my knowledge, no funds provided by the SB 21 will be used to support the proposed development on the Jordan Cove LNG terminal.
Thank you very much. We need to move on.
Yes.
Sorry, Jen.
Oh, did we already finish?
Yes, ma'am. Oh. I'm sorry.
Okay. But thank you anyway for your support of Senate Bill 21.
Chairs and Ways and Means Committee, my name is Larry Rapp. I'm a resident of Washington County. I'm a member of the Oregon Institute of Technology's President's Advisory Council. And I'm the retired Vice President of Administration, Corporate Secretary, and Legal Manager of Electroscientific Industries. I was unable to attend your Portland meetings, but consider the G-Bond need to finish the second wing of Oregon Institute of Technology's Center for Health Professionals so critical that I felt the need to be here today. The rising cost to health insurance for Oregon employers is in part due to the shortage of health professionals in Oregon. The state itself has estimated this shortage will be 59,000 by 2014. The Klamath community and OIT have raised the first $12 million to construct the center's first phase and to provide the matching funds, but the $9 million G-bond is needed to complete the building. This will save $2 million if we can continue to build the building without stopping. This G-bond would provide space for an additional 750 students a year in these critical programs, allowing community college students to move on to a graduate program and high school students to enter. And I might mention that these students currently are being turned away because we have limited space. These are for family wage jobs in every community in Oregon that has a medical facility. And I might state that Oregon Tech has the highest placement and the highest starting salaries of any institute of higher education in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. All right. Let's get Pat and Billy up. And on deck we'll have... We'll have Tom Nichols, Brenda Brown, Edward Smith, and Bo Fowle. sure I did that right. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Ned Beeman, the executive director of the North Bend City and the Coos Curry Housing Authority. Geez, I'd like to thank the committee for recognizing that housing costs are out of reach and that it's time for Oregon to invest in housing for hardworking families and for our neighbors on fixed incomes. I'm sorry I said Oregon. I'm from El Paso, Texas. I've been here since May.
Can I take his place?
The Housing Authority is a member of the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities and is also a supporter of the Housing Alliance. What are the needs? Workforce housing. The industry has difficulty recruiting and retaining employees due to housing costs. You've heard from a lot of people that want to bring more industry into the area. Without workforce housing, that's going to be very difficult to keep them here and sustain the industries. South Coast Oregon Housing Opportunity Provider, SOCOP, assists approximately 200 families in their first-time home buying program. Unfortunately, there isn't the housing stock for the first-time home buyer. Under the affordable housing arena, the Housing Authority serves 940 families throughout Coos and Curry County. 25% are working families, and more important, 50% of these families receive Social Security or SSI. 39 families are on various waiting lists for the Housing Authority, and 124 families are on the tribal waiting list for tribal housing. I want to ask you to keep the funding for the affordable housing program in your budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Ned. Yes, sir.
Members of the committee, Senator Berger, Representative Roblin, my name is John Souder. I'm executive director of the Coos Watershed Association, and my board has asked me to come today to testify in support of Senate Bill 5542, the allocation of Major 66 lottery money to watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, and the non-capital grant program. I'd like to use my time today to highlight the role that this funding and the Watershed Council work plays in local economic development because it's not something that you hear enough about. And I'd like to do that using four examples. The first is the efficiency of providing this money to watershed councils. Last year, we received $40,000 in funds similar to what would be provided in Senate Bill 5542. We turned that money into $2.1 million worth of grant applications, of which we have already received $1.6 million in grants. When we last looked at where that money went, 90% of it stayed in the state of Oregon, and 80% stayed within Coos County. This is a real economic activity in the county, and at this point it's a 40 to 1 return on investment. Secondly, you've heard about the problems that the counties have with going away at the Rural Secure Schools money. We work quite closely with the county commissioners and the road department. We won a national award last year that will allow us to rebuild an entire road system this summer with the county highway department. And then finally, we also have used this money to develop a program to support the commercial salmon fishermen when their season went south on them last year. We have hired directly ourselves 9 fishermen. There's dozens throughout the state that have benefited from this. So I urge you to maintain the appropriate and appropriate the level of money in Senate Bill 5542.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee, Senator Joanne Berger and Representative Arnie Noble. My name is Pat O'Connor. I'm president of Oregon Coast Community College, which serves Lincoln County on the Central Coast. I have driven from Lincoln City to join with Southwestern Oregon Community College and a sizable contingent of community college supporters to ask you to support key investments in community colleges, especially their operating and capital construction budgets. Please support the reinvestment in community colleges by approving the $529 million in operations for the 17 community colleges of Oregon. Oregon Coast has responded to our community needs by offering quality academic programs and workforce training. Some of our professional and technical programs are expensive, such as nursing and aquarium science, and have limited enrollment, but they are vitally important to the economic health of our community. Second, please support the capital construction package. Oregon Coast Community College is asking for a $7.5 million match
state to help construct an aquarium science building, a joint-use facility between Oregon Coast Community College and the Hatfield Marine Science Center of Oregon State University. This proposal is included in the governor's budget. Why is this request a prudent investment by the state of Oregon? First of all, it's a coordinated project between various public and private partners, including Oregon Coast Community College, Oregon State University, and the Oregon Coast Aquarium, as well as other public and private entities being served at the Hatfield Marine Science Center. This building is noted in the OSU master plan. This project also helps diversify the local workforce and is directly tied to Oregon's economic development in the areas of aquarium science, marine sciences, as well as other initiatives such as wave energy. The first floor will be dedicated to aquarium science and marine sciences instruction, while the second floor will be dedicated to research. Third, and most importantly, Oregon Coast Community College currently has match money in hand. We're ready to go. In 2004, residents voted a $23.5 million bond to build the Oregon Coast Community College's first permanent classroom facilities, and construction is underway. Despite hard economic times, local voters placed a priority on education and workforce development in our county. OCC needs participation by the state to maximize this partnership with Oregon State University and other entities. It just makes good business sense. In closing, the state's investment...
Go ahead. Just finish. Go ahead.
In closing, state's investment in Oregon Community College will yield dividends for the years to come. The most convincing case is made by our students. Thank you for listening, sir.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hello, my name is Billie Jo Smith. I'm from Toledo in Lincoln County, and I'm a member of Stand for Children. Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan and Senator Verger, I come to you today to support the funding of House Bill 2574, which modifies the Beginning Teacher Administrator and Mentoring Program. I want to thank the committee for including the requested $5 million in the recommended budget for K-12 education. My background in education and as a former school board member has made me painfully aware of the need for improving our support of beginning teachers and administrators. No industry would place new employees in the toughest situations with little or no guidance, support, or monitoring. Because we don't support our beginning teachers, they are leaving the profession. I retired from teaching in 2000, and since that time in the high school that I left, and they have hired 8 new teachers for 2 science positions, and the teachers are new again this year. The new principals need support too, and we know why. It's because highly successful schools always have inspired and skilled leaders. The revisions in the Oregon Mentor Program proposed in House Bill 2574 are research-based, and they're proven to develop good teachers and principals. Please keep this $5 million in your budget, but with one adjustment. The money needs to be appropriated to schools based on the numbers of new teachers and administrators. This could happen more effectively if they're in the Department of Ed budget rather than in the state school fund, which is distributed by ADM. Thank you very much for letting me testify today.
Thank you. Let's get our next panel up here. That'd be Tom, Brenda, Edward, and Ben. Then we'll have Kevin Stuffelbean, Cheryl Lorenzo, Gary Grease, and Jody McCaffrey on deck.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Nichols, and I'm a lifelong resident of the South Coast and currently the Director of Enrollment Management at Southwestern Oregon Community College, a position that allows me to oversee the areas of admissions, financial aid, registration, and student receivables. From this perspective, I would like to share with you the effects of inadequate state funding for community colleges on access and affordability, a phrase we've heard repeatedly for the past 10 to 12 years in regards to higher education in the state of Oregon. As a result of inadequate funding, community colleges have been forced to implement significant tuition increases just to maintain current levels of service for our students. The average cost of tuition at Oregon's community colleges has risen 61% in the last 6 years. One of the most significant results of this increased cost of attendance is that the dollar amount of student loans issued by Oregon community colleges rose 137% between 2000-2001 and 2004-2005 from $17.4 million to $41.3 million. This has led to a population of students that can least afford it to incur ever-increasing amounts of debt in order to obtain a college degree or the job skill training they need to provide a better life for themselves and or their families. As you have traveled around the state for the past few days, you have heard testimonials, you have been given statistics, and you have probably been cajoled, begged, and pleaded with. But what all this really comes down to is, what do you stand for? What do you want your legacy to be? I ask you to stand for change. I ask you to stand for funding the requested community college appropriation of $529 million and by making community college funding a top priority for the future of education in Oregon. In closing, the problem with politics is that it's political. Changing lives is not political, and that's what we do. We at Oregon's community colleges change lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and committee members. My name is Brenda Brown. I'm a member of Stand for Children, and I'm vice chair of the Lincoln County School District Board of Directors. I'm here today as a parent. I'd like to begin by expressing our great appreciation of this committee's proposed $6.245 billion investment in our K-12 schools. It clearly shows your commitment to education in our state. But for Lincoln County, it's not enough. Delivering the same level of service with the same number of staff for this next biennium would require a state funding level of $6.42 billion. We recognize that this level of funding is not likely, so we'll focus on what $6.3 billion would allow our district. At 6.3, Lincoln County School District could maintain its current service level, and it could expand some kindergarten classes to a full day, but this would only be possible with a reduction of staff, number one, and with no mandates attached to the $6.3 billion. I think it's important for you to know what current service level means for us in Lincoln County. It means one media specialist for the entire district of 11 buildings. It means shared music teachers, no middle school sports, and schools without drama, shop, home economics, and I could go on and on, but I won't. Our family has seen the effects of cuts on our schools over the short span of time that our own children were in schools in Lincoln County. In order for our youngest daughter to enter the university and the career of her choice, she was required to have chemistry. Our school only offered chemistry every other year. Ooh, I'll speak fast. So she was required to go to a community college out of our county after graduation and at our own expense. Lincoln County School District is filled with dedicated staff and teachers, and we will deliver an adequate program to our students. But is adequacy what we're striving for? We applaud your funding at the $6.245 billion. We truly do. But we are asking that this be raised to the $6.3 billion level to allow our district to just maintain what we have right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and committee members. My name is Edward Smith. I am here once again to speak on behalf of Thundering Oregon Recovery Homes Outreach Workers, Senate Bill 184, Policy Option Package 101-7. Oregon Recovery Homes, a program which provides houses of hope to learn a new way of life to 1,200 alcoholics and addicts in 149 houses throughout the state. Opening peer-ran houses in rural areas is our mission. When a cry out for help comes, we answer. Take Coos County. We have had many cries out to come to this community, but with two current outreach workers, the ability for us to come is hindered. With 149 houses in 16 counties, technical support stretches us very thin. We can only open one in one county at a time. This is a huge investment affecting thousands in the state to come. Oregon needs more hope. Please allow us to bring it to their communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Ben.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs Nolan, Schrader, and members of the committee. My name is Ben Fow. I am Vice President for Clinical and Support Services at Bay Area Hospital. Bay Area Hospital is a local 172-bed hospital. I'm here to talk about a strategic investment as your theme on your PowerPoint stated. I'm here to support the OIT building process. I believe it's a very prudent investment, and it's one that will reduce our expenses by many factors of this investment into the future. Bay Area Hospital has substantial experience with labor shortages. If this building is not funded, I believe that this will only exacerbate the issue. What we end up with when we have the shortages, we end up paying agency workers at many times the usual salaries, and the labor costs go up dramatically. We are on the edge of a major healthcare personnel shortage. This is caused obviously by the baby boomers that are the patients that are maturing, and also the aging of our current workforce. An example of where my start was in the laboratory. 16 of 19 employees will be retiring within a 9-year period starting in 3 years. We believe this, and we get a lot of our employees from OIT, we believe this is a very prudent investment and one that will pay off into the future. It's a very strategic investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's get Kevin, Cheryl, Gary, and Jody up. And on deck, we'll have Emily Weeks, Dale Helen, Linda Kjolvesen, and James Nielsen, please. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Schrader and Representative Nolan and committee members for being here. We greatly appreciate you coming down here to the people and hearing what we have locally to say. First off, I'd like to recognize the Senate Bill 21 is really a positive future for Coos County and the Southern Oregon and the state of Oregon, so we hope that you continue to support that bill for us. On state shared services, one of the things we want to talk about is public health. The funding for public health for additional support has been removed out of the co-chair's budget. And right now, Coos County receives a little less than $37,000 for state shared services for public health, which is not even enough right now to fund a public health nurse. So we hope to see additional funding added back into your budget for that, because being one of the ONC counties, that's a drastic problem for us on whether or not we're going to be able to maintain public health or relinquish it back to the state. So we hope to see an increase in that over your budget cycle now. The other thing that I want to really recognize you for is the $50 million that you have in the roads funds for us. That's definitely a big help for the counties, and we hope that we maintain that throughout the budget. The other areas we hope to see that we see additional funding for the bridges for the ONC. I know Senator Metzger has a proposal to actually add $30 million with using funding from ODOT's ending balance for bridges for ONC counties, and hope that we see that come to light also for us. And the last kind of comment is on Senate Bill 881, which is the funding for the community-based continuum of care services for mental health. We really drastically need to make sure that we see that full $105 million in there, because just with the building of the state hospital without that full funding package for the counties, we still are in the same problems. We have no ability to deal with the issues at a local level. Thank you for your time.
And we need your name, sir.
Kevin Stuffel, being Coos County Commissioner.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yes. Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee, thank you for coming today to our community. My name is Cheryl Lorenzo, and I'm the business manager for Coos County Public Health, and I want to emphasize some of the comments that Commissioner Stuffel being made. Public health does affect every Oregonian, And therefore, I would like to encourage you to reconsider the governor's recommended budget of $5 million for local public health. This really is a minor investment for a piece of Oregon's infrastructure. And currently, Oregon ranks in the bottom five nationally in funding for public health. Currently in Coos County, we are struggling, really struggling, to meet the needs of our community. We have already had to reduce services. The loss of the federal timber revenues may lead to the loss of local public health in Coos County. Currently, as Commissioner Stoppelbein said, the state support for public health provides less than 2% of the funding for Coos County's public health. The level of services that are mandated, unfortunately, are not funded. And the amount that we do receive is less than $37,000, which does not even cover the cost of one public health nurse. One of the things that's been mentioned several times today is the International Port of Coos Bay, and that does have an impact not only on the county, but on public health. Last year, we had a foreign ship come into the port waters, and they were immediately quarantined with a suspected case of tuberculosis. We sent two public health nurses out over a long weekend onto the quarantine ship, and they did their assessment, and they did their investigation, and worked with multi-agencies at the state, local, and federal levels. And they managed to manage the system. Those are the services that are in jeopardy because the funding for state support for public health supports communicable disease investigation and response. So support for public health is really critical. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Grease. I'm the director of Casa de Belen, transitional housing for homeless teenagers in Roseburg. I would also like to compliment you on your commitment to your legislative process and how to spend a fun-filled weekend in coming to rural Oregon. Thank you so much for that. As the director of Casa de Belen, I get the opportunity to deal with homeless teenagers. Now, my point that I would like you to consider would be it's couched in House Bill 5504. It's the Oregon Commission on Children and Family Budget. The commission had requested $4.6 million to address the current critical needs for homeless teenagers. And why I'd like you to go back and look at this and look at this carefully is homeless teenagers are not included, not represented by any state agency. So the Commission on Children and Family is really the custodian of their needs, and that when they propose how to address those needs. And I certainly don't I'm not a proponent of establishing a state agency to address homeless teenagers. Heaven only knows we probably have enough agencies. But anyway, going back to how those needs are addressed or are missed, most of the homeless teenagers, they have disconnected with school. They have been disconnected by school by many times by their parents as early as age 11. So the housing or the education support is kind of misses the mark for homeless kids. The funding to housing, they are not adults, so they don't have access to that source of support. And finally, in the health and mental health issue, most of them are not part of that system. So I encourage you to go back to look at the Commission on Children and Family, their budget in House Bill 5504, and consider establishing the $4.6 million that was established by that agency.
Very good. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming. My name is Jody McCaffrey, and I have two things I want to cover, so I'm going to try to go fast. My main issue on both of these is requesting that there be accountability with our tax money. I'm just a resident in this area. I pay taxes. My first issue is I feel that there is something really wrong regarding the system regarding the disabled. And the reason I say that is in the both areas that we've lived in this town, we've lived next to people who are not disabled any more than me, and they are drawing full disability, living off the system, and buying new cars, roofing their houses, you know, those kind of things. Meanwhile, the severely disabled people sit on waiting lists for years because they can't get into a system that is overloaded. Their elderly caregivers have to actually die before they place these people somewhere, and it's never in Coos County. So I'm just asking that you look at Coos County because we need additional group homes for the disabled here. My second issue has to do with Senate Bill 21, and I did provide a packet of information. I have already testified on this once in Salem, so I'll be brief here. But we have a history of our port promising us a lot of things and never having it come through. There's been many projects that a lot of money has been dumped into, such as T-Docs, a ferry, barge slip, a gas line. These all we were promised many jobs with these, and it didn't come through. So before we go just throwing money more at a system, we need to look and make sure that we're getting our bang for our buck here. As a group, as some of you may know, I have a group called the Citizens Against LNG. As a group, we don't oppose a cargo terminal, but if it's linked to an LNG terminal, we do have issue with that because we are opposed to the LNG terminal. And for over 2 years, the port director has stated, and well documented, that these are linked, that if the LNG is derailed, the cargo terminal will be derailed. So I want you to look through the stuff I provided. Was just what I came across this week in discrepancies. There needs to be some accountability here. There needs to be somebody looking at all these issues before money is spent. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's get Emily, Dale, Linda, and James up. And then we'll have Raleigh Lobsinger, James Moore, Julie Schuff, Steve Humphrey. We're getting into almost 3 o'clock, so we probably won't get to last few sheets, 8, 9, and 10. Maybe if we're lucky we'll get to some, but it's getting tough. A good testimony, and we'll just keep rolling along till 3:30. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Emily Wex, and I'm the project coordinator for the Micro Enterprise Development and Learning Program, the METAL program, at Umpqua Community Development Corporation. Umpqua Community Development Corporation is a nonprofit organization. It's located in Roseburg and has been providing affordable housing and economic development to Douglas, Coos, and Curry counties since 1994. The METAL program has been providing business training since 1994 and was based on a demonstrated need from the community to offer low-income entrepreneurs the opportunity to start a business or expand an existing business by providing them with the skills and tools necessary for their business's development and growth. House Bill 3027, the Targeted Small Business Opportunity Act, will be an important funding source and will be critical to ensure that our outreach and our assistance can continue to these disadvantaged entrepreneurs. Through the METAL program, we have been able to serve over 300 people in 2004 and 2005 and almost 400 in 2006 through our financial fitness training, our business assistance, and our community economic development. On their own, microbusinesses struggle day to day with their routine, limiting their progress. Collaboratively, though, they are powerful. Therefore, an underlying culture is being built to support new businesses locally. And a couple examples of how we're working with this community economic development is in Reedsport. We've been working with the downtown. We've been surveying them and doing an analysis of their progress and assisting with their urban renewal district planning. And so I just encourage you to support House Bill 3027. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Senators, representatives, it's a pleasure to have you here. I welcome the chance to talk to the rest of you. I've talked to Joanne and Arnie about these issues. My name is Dale Helland. I'm the director of Head Start in Coos and Curry counties, parent of a junior at North Bend High School, part-time instructor at Southwestern Oregon Community College, and a member of the Commission of Children and Families. I have an investment in our children and in our future. I applaud the work that you have done to fund education fund the programs to support our children. I encourage an enhanced support for those programs. But primarily, I want to support the full funding for Head Start. We've talked about economic development, and we've talked about education here. I truly believe that education is the foundation for economic development. And as you probably have known and have seen the research, there is clear evidence that the investment in quality preschool education is the best investment that any government can make in economic development. Oregon's pre-K Head Start program is not serving all of the children in Oregon. Even the money that you have apportioned will not serve all those children. Our increase of 3% to our base budget is nowhere near the 18% that the regular schools are receiving. Fully fund Head Start. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Linda Piovazan, and I'm the area manager for SMART on the South Coast. SMART is the Start Making a Reader Today program, and we pull volunteers in from the community to serve kindergarten through third grade students. I oversee 10 schools on the South Coast between Reedsport and Brookings, and that's in Reedsport, Coos Bay, North Bend, Coquille, Myrtle Point, Bandon, and Brookings. We serve nearly 700 children, and there are thousands of volunteer hours spent with our children here, helping them learn to read. SMART is Oregon's leading nonprofit literacy organization. We serve children in Title I schools who need help learning to read. In addition to providing the one-on-one reading support, SMART gives participating children 14 new books each year to take home and keep and read with their families. The state has recognized SMART's benefit to schools in the years past by providing limited funding for books, about $50,000 a year. We are requesting a total of $800,000 in state funding to cover our book costs for the next 2 years. We know that if a child does not learn to read by the third grade, he or she will have difficulty reading to learn and have difficulty succeeding in school and life beyond school. We also know that SMART is a proven program that helps these children to read. It makes sense that the state supports such a successful program for our children. I'd like to point out a couple of performance measures, and that is an independent study by the Eugene Research Institute revealed that fifth graders who participated in SMART are 60% more likely to reach state reading benchmarks than our similar students who did not participate in SMART. 4 out of 5 Oregon fourth graders from low-income families read below proficiency. Thank you.
Make sure you get those to our staff, though. We're interested in that.
Thank you. I'm Jim Nielsen, and I retired as a forester from the U.S. Forest Service, and I've been actively involved with the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, the Coquille Watershed Association, and a member of the Extension Advisory Council. I'm here today to speak in support of the OSU Extension Service. At the time of my retirement, two OSU Extension agents, Ralph Duddles in Forestry and Paul Heikla in Sea Grant, recruited me as one of the directors of the Coos Curry Small Woodlands Association, and I was the first coordinator of the Coquille Watershed Association. Ralph, until his retirement several years ago, was a vital force in the management of small woodlands in our area and active in the affairs of the Small Woodlands Association. Small woodlands compose nearly one-half of the private forest land in Oregon and are important in terms of timber production, community stability, and diversity of forest habitat. The Extension Service promotes these values. Both Ralph and Paul Heikla initiated the first projects of the Coquille Watershed Association, and Paul was the key player in the development and success of this organization. I can personally testify to this. The motto of the Coquille Watershed Association is working together to promote natural resource conservation and economic stability. To me, this describes the value of the Extension Service. They are part of the glue that holds our community together. I would like to encourage you to fully fund the OSU statewide policy option package at $15 million as recommended by the Oregon University System Board. Thank you for this opportunity to provide you with input.
Thank you. Okay, let's get Raleigh, James, Julie, and Steve up. And we'll have Stephen Hennessy, Heather Mann, Judy McMakin, and Tom Bishop on deck. Go ahead.
I'm Raleigh Lobsinger. I'm representing Oregon Coast Community Action. And I'm here today to thank the committee for supporting its investment in affordable housing. And I wanted to let everyone know that ORCA is the convening member of the local 10-year plan to end homelessness because we believe that affordable housing is so critical to the health of the community now and in the future. ORCA operates in an area including Coos and Curry counties. And in those counties right now, in order to afford the average one-bedroom apartment, you'd need to make about $18,000 to $20,000 a year. We have a lot of retired elderly folks on Social Security whose annual incomes are $12,000 and $12,024. We also have a lot of working families in our communities, people like janitors, home health aides, retail salespeople, who have families. They'll need to rent a two-bedroom unit. They'll need about $23,000 a year, but these jobs provide incomes in the range of $20,000 to $21,000 a year. This means that people are making choices between food, health care, medicine, utilities, and this is something that destabilizes our community, makes it difficult for students to learn when they're precariously housed like this. And we wanted to point out how important affordable housing is to all future economic development activities. I thank you very much, and I hope that you will maintain that funding.
Thank you. Good afternoon, committee. I'm James Moore. I'm a court-appointed special advocate. My wife and I have been invested in this program since 1996. CASAs are mandated by state law, one CASA per case. That doesn't happen. It's not funded at the local level to allow that to carry on at that level. Coos County has approximately 300 to 450 children that require CASAs at any time. During my tenure as a CASA, we have 50 volunteers at the present time. CASAs themselves, like myself, are all volunteers. We're your cheapest labor, let me tell you. The program does require some money because we have to have a director and volunteer coordinators. And that program is generally funded out of the juvenile system or the judiciary system. So there are systemic causes for people to be taken into care. There's unemployment, drug use, criminality, all kinds of things. None of those things are probably going to change unless a lot of the things that we heard here today also happen. You know, better jobs, those kinds of things. But the children themselves are the victims. They need counseling. They need medical care. They need education. They need a place to go. We need more money from the judicial system in order to do that. I urge you to fund the judicial package at the fullest amount that you can do. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you all for coming. It's kind of special to be allowed to speak and give you some input. I know the work that you do is difficult. My name is Julie Schuff. I'm a registered nurse, and I work at Bay Area Hospital. I'm also a proud member of Oregon Nurses Association. As you are perfectly aware, and we all are aware, there were some dramatic cuts made between 2003 and 2006 to essential state services and programs in response to plummeting revenue. I see the consequences of those cuts every day in the job that I do. Consequences is actually too sterile of a word. It's human tragedy. I'd like to tell you a story. I recently took care of a woman who, because of these budget reductions, was dismissed from the rolls of Oregon Health Plan. She had high blood pressure. She was no longer able to afford her medications. She came to our intensive care unit suffering from a cerebral hemorrhage, and now she has basic reflexes. Her heart beats, and she breathes, but she can't talk. So I must speak for her and the thousands of vulnerable, poor Oregonians. You have to restore funding to these vital services, to Oregon Health Plan, to mental health services, and to public health. I do appreciate that we're trying to save money for a rainy day, but if you don't spend money on some of these simple preventative measures, it's going to be catastrophic. We'll have a catastrophe. We'll have a reason to spend the money. And the rainy day, I suggest for many of the poorest in Oregon, is already here. It's raining.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon and welcome, senators and representatives, to the Bay Area. My name is Steve Humphrey, and I'm an EMT working here in Coos County. Trying to maintain the high quality of ambulance care is being significantly strained by the high rising cost for trained personnel, fuel, high equipment tech, and pharmaceuticals. Despite this, the ambulance services here in Coos County remain committed to provide emergency health care to all who call within minutes, 24 hours a day. Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements are well below half of the actual cost to provide care. State statistics indicate that here in Coos County, we have the highest rate in the state with 70 to 80% of our patients on Medicare and another 10% without any coverage. The state average is 40 to 45%. I looked at all of our emergency response calls that my company, Bay Cities Ambulance, answered on April 5th of this year. We provided emergency care and transport to 16 patients. Seven were Medicare, three Medicaid, two without, one veterans coverage, and only three with private insurance. As ambulance services here in Coos County, we are required to provide the same high standard of care set forth by the state for less than half the income of doing business. Please support the inclusion of $467,000 in the DMAP budget directed to enhance emergency ambulance transportation in rural Oregon. This, coupled with the federal matching funds, would bring ambulance reimbursement from less than half to 52% of our cost. Your support for quality ambulance service to the sick and injured in the rural areas would certainly make a difference in the patient's outcome and well-being. Thank you for coming and listening to all of us.
Thank you very much. Well, I think we're getting near the end here. We'll have Steve, Heather, Judy, and Tom come up. Probably one more panel after that, given the time. And let's see. Let's have Ken Harlan, Joe Snyder, Roger Langley, and Tom Boggs come up for the on-deck circle. Yes.
Hello, my name is Stephen Hennessy. I'm the president of the Coos County Master Gardeners Association. I am also a member of the Family Food Educators, both of which are run out of the OSU Extension Office in Merle Point. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 5515, OSU statewide program, including the OSU Extension Office, which provides a great service to the community. I have a question for you people up there. How many of you have had two helpings of fruit and vegetables today? How many? Oh, you guys need nutrition. Okay. And those of you who raised your hand, how many know where it came from, what fertilizers, chemicals, and preservatives were used in their production?
It came from Chile or some other place that had to apple feed.
The food you eat today has less nutritional value than the food that was produced 25 years ago. With the growing cost of food and the staggering amount of chemicals and preservatives used today and food being irradiated and genetically enhanced, there is a need and a great demand to get back to basics. More and more people are interested in growing and preserving their own food. This is evident by the success of the community garden, and the number of people attending our annual seminar, and the number of contacts the Coos County Master Gardeners had last year at over 4,600. That's a quarter of the population of Coos Bay and North Bend. This program has a huge effect on this community. With scientific-based data and facts supplied by OSU, we are able to inform people of the proper way to grow, safely handle, and preserve food, keeping them safe and healthy. A healthy and well-fed Oregonian is a productive and happy Oregonian. Give a person a salad, and they'll eat for a day. Teach them to garden, and they'll eat for a lifetime. Our children are our future. We have programs to go into schools. However, our FFE, Education Program Assistant, is not a fully funded position. If you can fund this position, it would go a long way to educate our children in proper nutrition. There are many programs I would love to talk about, but there's not enough time. So in closing, I ask you to fully fund the OSU statewide policy options package, Senate Bill 5515. Let's keep Oregonians healthy, well-nourished, and safe.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heather Mann. I'm a fisheries consultant from Siletz, which is in Lincoln County. I'm also the deputy director of the West Coast Seafood Processors Association. Our members process the majority of seafood that's landed into our state. Oregon's rural communities continue to transition as we move toward increased sustainability. But what does that really mean? Of course, we think about our natural resources, our marine life, but even more important to the state of Oregon are our vital human resources, the men, the women, the businesses that make up our rural communities. Some of you are from rural communities and understand that economic stability in these communities is difficult to achieve and even more difficult to maintain. Many of our coastal communities are highly dependent on the commercial fishing industry. Businesses that support the industry are just as fundamental. Traditional seafood processors located in most every fishing port in Oregon are the main connection between harvesters and the global market. Processors are generally the largest employers in their communities, and they provide family wage jobs with benefits. The state's investment in both the Community Seafood Initiative and the statewide public service agencies through SB 581 and 5515 will help ensure that coastal communities dependent on seafood production will both achieve and maintain their economic viability well into the future. The Community Seafood Initiative is headquartered at the Seafood Consumer Center in Astoria. It improves Oregon's competitive edge in the areas of product handling, seafood marketing, seafood processing technology, and the innovation of product development. The applied research portion of these services is heavily dependent on the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station and the Seafood Lab, which also provide important services. Without the state's investment in these important programs, Oregon's seafood companies and the rural communities that depend on them will suffer. When Oregon invests in these resources, they invest directly in their rural coastal communities and the thousands of Oregon jobs generated through the commercial fishing industry. We urge the passage of SB 581 and 5515, and we further support the Board of Higher Education's recommendation to the governor for a 15% increase in the budget of statewide public service agencies. The bottom line is that these communities need continued economic development, family wage jobs, and economic stability. Investing in these service programs now will move Oregon's coastal communities closer to achieving these goals. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Co-Chair Schrader and Morgan and Nolan and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present this morning. My name is Judy McMakin, and I'm the director of the Coos County Commission on Children and Families. I am here in support of Senate Bill 5504. This bill restores some of the 51% decrease in locally invested funds that have been lost to the Commission since 1999. We support this bill because the co-chair's budget and we support the governor's budget because the co-chair's budget eliminates almost $10 million in funds for local communities. I am asking you to reinstate and fund the $3 million for basic capacity and $1 million for homeless and runaway youth, in particular as they will specifically impact Coos County. We also support increased funding for the CCF grant streams called Healthy Start, CASA, Great Start, Children, Youth, and Families, and Juvenile Crime Prevention. In Coos County, these programs fund a home visiting program for 48 high-risk new moms, a CASA program for over 100 children at risk, a court school serving our highest-risk youth, a counseling program serving non-adjudicated youth in hopes of keeping them out of the system, a program for our child care providers to increase their knowledge and skills, part of our shelter care system, and even a very small program for incarcerated youth that provides them some music lessons. In the last 7 years, the Coos County Commission, through the system, we have been able to generate an additional $2 million to match our state allocation of $2,600,000. We almost doubled our state allocation. We need state support and match to continue these efforts. By supporting Senate Bill 5504, you will help us to continue to do this, and you will help Coos County support its children and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you. I'm Tom Bishop, and I speak today in support of the Coos County Commission on Children and Families. I'd like to tell you about our Coos County program, Music for a Better World, that I believe is unique in the state of Oregon and maybe in the United States. Over the past 4 years, we have offered music lessons to 160 teenagers residing at our local adolescent treatment facilities. The children learn to play the keyboard, guitar, piano, or sing in a vocal ensemble. 74 children have advanced to a level capable of performing in a concert that is given at one of the facilities or within the social services community. Those of us who work with these children watch them teeter between a life of crime and incarceration and a life of success and contribution to society. Through the power of positive reinforcement, our goal has been to offer them the opportunity to experience success and the joy that leading a life of contribution can bring. When we begin working with a student, they are always on the crime incarceration side of the equation. When we are able to successfully perform a musical work in a concert, they are instantly transported to the success contribution side. As the audience enthusiastically applauds and cheers, the performers, at least for a moment, know how it feels to be successful. For every child that we lose to crime, it costs us greatly. For every child that becomes a successful contributing member of society, the state benefits financially and socially. Thank you all for your kind attention today and for your service to our wonderful state. I love Oregon, and I know you do too. Thank you. And please be creative and help find some more money for the Commission on Children and Families.
Thank you. All right, let's get our final panel up. Ken, Joe, Roger, and Tom.
Good afternoon. My name is Ken Harlan. I'm the vice president of our local Bay Area Senior Center. Back in June, on high panel, glad you're here, Joanne, Arnie. Back in June of this year, or 2006, a deputy county appraiser showed up at our facility and informed us that he was going to measure our little thrift shop that makes about $3,000 a year for square footage. And we learned in the process that what we were going to do was lose our nonprofit status for that square footage. In research that I've done, including a trip to Salem, where I went into the archives and studied this bill, that bill, who was on this committee and that committee, I found out that HB 3026 was created back in 1993 and has been revised a number of times. I'm here actually to urge you, all of you, to take a good hard look at what senior citizens do in senior centers and the service that they provide in all counties, not just Coos County, and think about what we would do without them. We struggle here in Coos County to make ends meet. We need every buck that we can get. And if we have to pay property taxes, that's money going out the door that we will argue all day long that we can make better use of.
So if HB 306, 3026 comes before you for consideration, think about us. I would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another beautiful spring day in Coos County. Thank you for coming down here to visit us. What a job you have. I admire your dedication, and I really admire your stamina this afternoon. My name is Joe Snyder. I am a rural veterinarian in Myrtle Point. Those of you who don't know where Myrtle Point is, it's 15 miles west of Remote. I'd like to say a few words about agriculture, which seems to be a forgotten economic factor in this assembly today. But before I came over here, I called up one of my medium-sized, relatively well-doing organic dairymen in the area, and he informed me that his annual payroll, in addition to supporting his own family, was $200,000 for 2006. That's 7 full-time employees. For 3 of those employees, he also provides housing for the employee and his or her family. You multiply that by 10 or 15 dairies, mostly organic, in the county, and add the beef industry and the sheep and goat industry and the cranberry industry and the small woodlots. It's a big economic driver in this county. It's been in this county from the beginning, and we hope it'll continue to grow and be a part of that county. And as Jim Nielsen said, the Extension Service is part of the glue that holds this rural agricultural community together. And I could give you long lists of the good and worthwhile projects that Extension has done here. Extension, support of Extension is truly an investment in the community, as you know. The county provides a great deal of support, but we also depend on the support from the state. So I urge you to fully fund the statewide, Oregon State University statewide program for the full $15 million. I have 2 quick other things I want to add. One is, I don't have time to explain it, but the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory at Oregon State University provides a wonderful service and really has been chronically underfunded. Secondly, I am a smart reader in 2 school districts in Coos County, and I noticed that one of your goals is to have literacy by third grade level, and there's probably no more economically viable or bigger bang for the buck than what SMART does for struggling readers in this state. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming to the Southern Oregon Coast and being with us today. My name is Roger Langley. I'm the executive director of Bobaloney Ranch, which is a member of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. We're a nonprofit social service agency located here in Coos Bay, which, among others, has contracts with the Oregon Youth Authority to provide residential treatment to adolescent youth committed to their care. The private provider system has striven long before the advent of Senate Bill 267 to provide services that are effective, accountable, and result in improved positive outcomes in the lives of the youth served. Likewise, the Oregon Youth Authority, from my point of view, has had a similar focus from its inception. The evidence-based practices requirement of Senate Bill 267 has only served to further strengthen the partnership and our goal of quality services and improved outcomes. However, I believe to achieve the goals of Senate Bill 267, funding of the budget requested by the Oregon Youth Authority must be honored. I would ask that the $4.9 million be restored to the Oregon Youth Authority. Funding restoration would enable a rate increase for those treatment services provided by the private side of the partnership. It's imperative to fund actual cost to evidence-based practices, which is 30% higher than current provider rates. With the restoration of funding, Bobaloney Ranch would be able to provide better outcomes to reduce statewide juvenile recidivism, reduce Oregon Youth Authority parole and probation recidivism, reduce runaways from residential care. Thus far, the support of the Oregon Youth Authority and the funding efforts by private providers has helped build a bridge the gap between the deficits in resources and the ability to implement good practices. In addition to my testimony for Oregon Youth Authority, I would also like to support what's been said here today for the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. I would also like to see the Ways and Means Committee take a look at the governor's recommended amounts and restore those to that program. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief.
Good afternoon, and thank you for squeezing me in. The best is last, right? So, my name's Tom Boggs. I'm the police chief over at Sutherland. I've been a police officer nearly 30 years. And what I'm here today is to basically, I know a lot of this today has been education and learning, and I'm speaking towards the police academy. That is up public safety's K through 12. That's where we send our kids to try to grasp what it is to be a police officer. They've recently, as the first of this year, I've gone to a 16-week curriculum, and it's coupled with classroom and scenario-based training, which is incorporated entirely through the academy, and it's totally different from what it was 25 years ago when I went through the academy, which was 7 weeks long and in and out. And you learned the rest of it on the job, and it's no longer safe to do that. These kids that we're sending off to these schools, you put a lot of responsibility on. You give them the authority, essentially, to take human life. And by reducing the training that they're going to get just to begin their career in this job is an extreme liability, not only for the officers, but the people they deal with on the street, the agencies they work for. All the training that they get is not enough. And I want to thank the representatives that showed up in Sutherland today for Dean Bright, a soldier that fell in Iraq, and they did a memorial service, and I thank the representatives for that.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everybody here. For those that didn't get a chance to testify, I really apologize. Please submit written testimony or send us some emails with your comments. We do read those. We have the website that you can refer to. So thank you. I'd like to thank our staff that's done a wonderful job on our seven-city tour. Ken and Ian, Mike and James, just wonderful, just wonderful. And I'd like to thank my panel once again, hanging in there, really, really good, tough, tough trip, and I as co-chair and Mary as co-chair really, really appreciate your support and attentiveness here. Thank you all very much. Excuse me. I'd like to know how... Did you just...